Today is Monday, November 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. American journalist Danny Fenster is on a plane on his way home after being freed in Myanmar.
According to Richardson, he and Danny Fenster were stopped by Qatar and then on the way home to be reunited with his family.
The president of the UN summit describes the final pledges made by countries at the end of COP26 as a win.
History has been made here in Glasgow.
And Austria imposes a nationwide lockdown for unvaccinated people who haven't recently been infected with COVID-19. We'll have these stories and more next. American journalist Danny Fenster is on a plane home after being released by Myanmar authorities. He had been sentenced to 11 years in prison. Former U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Bill Richardson negotiated his release. I asked VOA State Department correspondent Nike Ching what U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken had to say about his release.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken welcomed the release of Daniel Fenster, or we call Danny Fenster. He commends U.S. ambassadors and U.S. personnel in the U.S. Embassy in Rangoon for all the help, including Special Presidential Envoy for Hostage Affairs, Roger Carstens, and other partners, including Governor Bill Richardson, who helped facilitate Danny Fenster's release. Blinken said that the United States is glad that Danny will soon be united with his family as we continue to call for the release of others who remain unjustly imprisoned in Burma.
What was he charged with, and what kind of prison sentence was he facing before this happened?
Fenster was arrested on May 24th at Yangon International Airport, shortly before he was to board a flight to the United States. He was sentenced last Friday to 11 years in jail on charges of unlawful association, incitement against the military, and breaching visa rules.
What happens now? Do you know where he is and where he's headed?
Danny Fenster was released to former U.S. ambassador to UN Bill Richardson. And according to Richardson, he and Danny Fenster were stopped by Qatar and then on the way home to be reunited with his family.
Tell us a little bit about the background of former Ambassador Richardson. Has he been instrumental in gaining the release of other Americans like this?
Bill Richardson was on a humanitarian mission to Myanmar early in November, and he met with a military leader, Hun Tak, in Myanmar. So according to him, Danny Fenster was released to him. Richardson had been taken several humanitarian missions before, and he was also in Myanmar, and also he was involved in a trip to North Korea trying to help the release of other Americans detained in those countries.
That was VOA State Department correspondent Nike Ching. She was speaking with me earlier Monday. Nearly 200 countries signed the Global Climate Pact at the end of the UN summit, pledging to speed up action on tackling climate change. But last-minute changes from China and India sought key alterations on phasing out the use of fossil fuels. Henry Ridgewell reports.
Hearing no objections, it is so decided.
The gavel came down on 2 weeks of intense and sometimes emotional negotiations. 197 nations finally agreed on a deal aimed at preventing catastrophic climate change. The summit president, Alok Sharma, described it as a fragile win.
History has been made here in Glasgow. And what we now need to ensure that the next chapter charts the success of the commitments that we have solemnly made together in the Glasgow Climate Pact. Thank you.
The goal of limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, first laid out in 2015, remains a key pillar of the Glasgow Agreement. And for the first time, the Climate Pact included a reference to ending fossil fuels. But to the dismay of many delegates, last-minute pressure from India and China forced a watering down of the language. India's Environment Minister Bhupendra Yadav explained his country's objections.
How can anyone expect that developing countries can make promises about phasing out coal and fossil fuel subsidies? Developing countries have still to deal with their development agendas and poverty eradication.
So what was signed off in the final text? All countries agreed to come back next year with improved targets on cutting emissions, much sooner than the previous five-year cycle. They agreed to phase down rather than phase out coal and fossil fuels. Rich countries agreed to increase their commitments on climate finance, the money they will pay to poorer countries to adapt to climate change and decarbonize their economies. And there's new recognition of the need for richer nations to compensate developing countries for loss and damage from climate change. There was an agreement on international carbon markets whereby CO2 emission quotas or credits can be traded between countries. And there were separate deals on reducing deforestation and slashing methane emissions. The deal was a compromise, a text that all 197 parties signed, some reluctantly. Is it enough? Opinions differ widely. The United States Special Envoy on Climate Change, John Kerry, was upbeat.
We are, in fact, closer than we have ever been before to avoiding climate chaos and securing cleaner air, a safer water, and healthier planet.
The United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres was circumspect in his assessment of the deal.
The approved texts are a compromise. They reflect the interests, the conditions, the contradictions, and the state of political will in the world today. They take important steps, but unfortunately, the collective political will was not enough to overcome some deep contradictions.
Jennifer Morgan, the executive director of Greenpeace International, said the deal didn't go far enough.
Well, I think it's meek and it's weak, but it does send a signal of the end of coal. So that is a good thing, but it doesn't meet the moment.
Outside the summit, climate activists made their feelings clear. Some were arrested as they tried to scale the summit barriers. After 2 weeks of intense negotiations, delegates are now heading home.
The next big milestone is the COP27 climate summit, scheduled to be held in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, in 2022. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News at the COP26 summit in Glasgow.
Countries are looking to begin funding a global counterattack on rising temperatures on Earth. Meanwhile, scientists in Denmark are searching for clues to our warming planet's future by studying ice from the past. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more.
Under dim lights, so as not to contaminate the sample, researchers cut frozen sediment in a journey through time to an ecosystem of the past.
We're trying to learn more about what that environment was like, what the climate conditions were like at that time, and use that information to understand how sensitive the Greenland ice sheet may be to melting under human-caused climate change in the future.
Andrew Christ is one of the researchers at the Ice Core Archive in the University of Copenhagen's Niels Bohr Institute. At this library, samples like the one he cut through earlier sit on shelves awaiting study. The frozen, muddy sediments once lay nearly 1.5 kilometers beneath the Greenland ice sheet. U.S. scientists drilled them out in the 1960s as part of an effort to establish a military base there. Experts say those deep samples are the only ones worth studying.
All the meteorological measurements and atmospheric measurements humans have done in the last 100 years or so are already influenced by climate change that is human-caused. So if we want to see the natural state of climate and natural variability, then we need to go way, way further back in time.
The Niels Bohr Institute's Bo Vitner is part of the international team of scientists using a technique called luminescence dating that reveals when minerals last had direct sunlight. Along with other readings, it could show previous temperatures when the Greenland ice sheet previously melted away. Initial results from 2020 suggest that happened in the past million years. Christ says as scientists, it's their job to give the world a guiding playbook.
This is how the Earth works. If you add too much carbon to the atmosphere, it's going to get too warm. You're going to melt the ice sheets. You're going to change weather patterns, and it's going to make life very difficult for us as humans. Or we can look towards a different path with less carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and a future that is not as uncertain and difficult for us.
Laid end to end, the frozen samples here would stretch more than 20 kilometers. Researchers keep them constantly chilled in freezers at negative 30 degrees Celsius. According to a study published in 2020, Greenland lost a record amount of ice in 2019, yielding enough water to cover California under 1.25 meters of water. It is estimated that if all of that ice were to melt, sea levels would rise by more than 6 meters. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
A nationwide lockdown has gone into effect in Austria for unvaccinated people who haven't recently had the coronavirus. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
Officials have signaled further measures may follow amid soaring infection rates. The move prohibits people 12 and over who haven't been vaccinated or recently recovered from leaving their homes, except for basic activities such as working, grocery shopping and going for a walk or getting vaccinated. The lockdown, which is being imposed until November 24, is believed to affect about 2 million people in the Alpine country of 8.9 million. Austria's leader has described the country's vaccination rate as shamefully low. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Closing arguments in the trial of Kyle Rittenhouse, accused of killing two men and wounding another at a police brutality protest in Kenosha, Wisconsin, are set to begin Monday. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
The 18-year-old faces charges ranging from intentional homicide, punishable by life in prison, to an underage weapons charge that could mean a few months in jail if convicted. He was 17 at the time. Rittenhouse sobbed as he testified he acted in self-defense, saying he feared for his life last year during a night of unrest following the shooting death by police of Jacob Blake, a black man. Rittenhouse is white, so were his victims. Prosecutors paint him as a vigilante who came to the protest with a rifle to provoke a response. With a verdict near, the governor put 500 National Guard on standby. I'm Julie Walker.
The European Union is widening sanctions against Belarus to include airlines, travel agents, and individuals accused of helping to lure migrants to Europe as part of a hybrid attack against the bloc by President Alexander Lukashenko. The EU has previously slapped a number of sanctions on Lukashenko and top Belarus officials over what it says were fraudulent elections last year and the security crackdown that followed. EU foreign ministers agreed on Monday to adjust the sanction criteria to include companies and people accused of being involved in the ongoing migrant standoff at the country's border with Poland, Latvia, and Lithuania. Lukashenko has dismissed the move. China has confined nearly 1,500 university students to their dormitory rooms and hotels following an outbreak of COVID-19 in the northeastern city of Dalian. The order came on Sunday after several dozen new cases of the virus were reported around a university in the city. Students are attending class remotely and having their meals delivered to their rooms. The lockdown is the latest example of China's zero-tolerance approach to the outbreak. Quarantines, mandatory testing, and travel restrictions are the new normal in China. This is VOA News. Argentina's ruling Peronist Party was reeling on Sunday after a midterm vote that saw its center-left coalition lose its majority in Congress for the first time in almost 40 years and taste defeat in its stronghold province of Buenos Aires. Reuters correspondent Brian Wood reports.
Argentina's ruling party lost its majority in Congress for the first time in nearly 40 years after a midterm election on Sunday. 2 years ago, the Peronist Party handily won out over the conservative opposition. But this vote, they lost on almost all key races on the ballot, tasting defeat even in the capital city and political stronghold of Buenos Aires. The city's opposition party mayor, Horacio Rodriguez Larreta, reveled in the victory.
We've had a historic election in Buenos Aires province. We have won again thanks to voters. Thank you. I know it's because they want to change. They are going through a bad time, insecurity and unemployment.
Voters appear to turn away from the center-left government amid spiraling inflation and poverty rates exacerbated by the global health crisis. President Alberto Fernandez, in an address to the nation, called for patriotic cooperation from the opposition, which will now be needed to push laws through Congress.
We need the majority to forge a consensus. With respect to this, and as soon as possible, I'm going to approach representatives of the popular will and the political forces that represent them to agree on a shared agenda. A responsible opposition and one which is open to dialogue is an opposition that is patriotic.
The major defeat comes as pressure builds to strike a new deal with the International Monetary Fund to roll over nearly $50 billion in debt the country cannot afford to pay.
That was Reuters correspondent Brian Wood. A Greek prosecutor has launched an urgent investigation into criminal organizations supplying fake vaccination certificates, both domestically and from neighboring states, mainly from Balkan countries. The probe comes as COVID-19 infections are happening again in Greece, mainly in the country's northern areas bordering the Balkans, where fake vaccination certificates have become a hot commodity. Anthi Karazafa reports from the Greek capital.
It is shocking testimony like this one from a Greek woman who refuses to get vaccinated that have authorities scrambling to catch scammers operating across this European Union nation. Keeping her back to the camera and her identity hidden, she tells a local television broadcaster she is desperately seeking dodgy doctors or healthcare staff to get a fake vaccination certificate at whatever the cost. She has been calling up doctors in Athens, she says, explaining her refusal to participate in the government's vaccination program and need, as she calls it, to resort to such steps because she has no other means of operating freely in the country. All healthcare officials she has contacted so far, she says, have refused her bids. They are scared. Greece's centre-right government only recently ordered healthcare staff, public and private, nationwide to be vaccinated or face steep fines and job loss. An investigation launched by Greece's Division of Internal Affairs, an anti-corruption unit within the police, however, has so far found at least 10 areas across the country providing a deluge of fake certifications through questionable healthcare providers. That would explain, experts tell VOA, why COVID-19 infections here have rocketed in recent weeks, placing Greece, once a near COVID-19 free country, now among the most infected within the EU, along with Belgium, Poland, Holland, Croatia, Hungary, and Bulgaria. It's not just dodgy healthcare providers in Greece fanning the scam, though. Organized criminal networks, as authorities call them, are operating through the dark web, providing anti-vaccine Greeks with forged EU vaccine passes issued from Bulgaria for up to $350. The dubbed voice of this middleman, as released on state media here, explains. He says his links in Bulgaria notify him, and he leads those interested up to the capital of Sofia, where they go to specific doctors, give their details, pay, and leave with the European certificate without having been jabbed, adding that he alone has sent more than 100 people there. Most certificates, investigators say, show recipients receiving the one-shot Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which is not traceable in laboratory results. The rise in fake vaccine certificates has dominated Greece's north, areas that border Bulgaria, sending COVID-19 infection rates to record levels, straining the healthcare system anew. Demand for fake certificates has surged as the government in Athens has imposed sweeping restrictions, allowing only the vaccinated to enter state buildings, banks, restaurants and shopping centres. Faced with what authorities call an epidemic of fake certificates, police have boosted inspections at the borders and imposed stiff fines of almost $6,000 on those caught with them. Apart from Greece, several other EU member countries have seen a surge in similar illegal activities. Earlier this month, in fact, EU authorities launched a massive investigation after detecting the COVID-19 digital certificates gateway had been hacked. Anthi Karasava for VOA News, Athens, Greece.
That was Reuters correspondent Anthi Karasava reporting. A popular Austrian national park is to be renamed because of its association with the slave trade in the mid-1800s. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
The Ben Boyd National Park, 520 kilometres south of Sydney, is named after a 19th century Scottish colonialist. Benjamin Boyd is considered Australia's first blackbirder. This was the term given to business operators who transported Pacific Islanders to Australia, where they were paid minimal wages to evade anti-slavery laws. The workers were often kidnapped or coerced into sailing to Australia. Ben Boyd National Park covers about 50 kilometres of rocky coastline and sheltered inlets near the whale-watching town of Eden. It's being renamed after the findings of an independent report showing Boyd's links to the slave trade. The report found he shipped 192 men and women to eastern Australia to work on his estates and ships in 1847. The study also stated that a second voyage to the South Pacific ordered by the businessman ended in violence and the deaths of numerous villagers. The decision to rename the park follows a long campaign by Pacific Island communities and Aboriginal groups. New South Wales State Environment Minister Matt Keane says Boyd doesn't deserve to be honoured.
Ben Boyd was a scoundrel. He was involved in forcibly removing people from their homes and forcing them to work on his properties.
Consultations will soon begin with First Nation community leaders to find a new name for the park. The practice of blackbirding became common in the Australian state of Queensland. It's estimated that about 62,000 men were brought to work on plantations in northern New South Wales and Queensland between 1863 and 1904. Aboriginal leaders also want to have colonial place names and monuments removed across Australia, including more than 20 statues of European explorers in Sydney. Australia was colonised by the British and became a penal colony in 1788. Boyd was killed by islanders in the Solomon Islands in 1851. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Hot on the heels of Netflix's breakout South Korean hit Squid Game, Apple has rolled out its first Korean language original series this month to coincide with the launch of its Apple TV Plus streaming service in South Korea. Reuters correspondent Jason Albano has that story.
Based on a Korean webcomic, Dr. Brain tells the story of a neurologist who tries to find clues to a family accident through brain experiments. The six-episode sci-fi show stars Lee Sun-kyun, who fans of the Oscar-winning Korean film Parasite may recognize.
The series is a very deep science fiction mystery thriller, but at the same time, it is a drama about how a man who lacked feelings began receiving others' emotions due to side effects of brain scanning.
Rival streaming service Netflix struck gold with Squid Game. It became the service's biggest original series launch. Apple's foray into Korean content comes after Squid Game helped catapult South Korean culture to new levels of global success. Dr. Brain's director, Kim Jae-woon, wants his series to prove his country has more to offer.
I hope Dr. Brain can be an opportunity to show there are diverse works in South Korea that have multiple colors and cover a wide variety of nuances, sensibilities, and materials.
So far, Apple TV Plus lags behind Netflix in South Korea, which has been offering licensed and original Korean content for several years.
That was Reuters correspondent Jason Albano. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of Nadia Taha and the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Carol Van Damme in Washington.